Good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here to share the Dharma today. A special welcome to our guests. For those of you who are a little bit new to practice, let me say something about a teisho. A teisho is not a talk in the usual sense. It is not a sermon. It's not meant to convey information. Teisho is an attempt by the teacher to express the Dharma as clearly and as directly as possible in words. But it is not only an attempt at expressing the Dharma, it is also an expression of the teacher's aspirations. In a teisho, the teacher is talking to themselves about as much as they're talking to anybody else. So the bar in teisho is set pretty high. And that can be a little bit off-putting. So don't try to understand or analyze or figure it out. Just sit up straight and let it flow through you, like the wind through the trees. Teishos have a strange habit. What is said in teishos have a habit of popping up in your practice, maybe a year or two from now. And suddenly, oh, that's what he meant when he said that. So be patient with yourself and just listen. If you need to shift your posture, that's perfectly fine, but please do it quietly and mindfully. And however you sit, keep the back straight and the head up. Every day in session, and out of session, some of the time, we chant the Heart Sutra. We just finished chanting it today. Form is only emptiness, emptiness only form. Form is no other than emptiness, emptiness no other than form. In this world of form, time, space, and karma, everything changes. It's a fundamental teaching of the Buddha, is impermanence. To rely on anything that has a beginning and an end, anything perceived, seen, heard, tasted, touched, or even thought, to rely on such things is to rely on a candle in the wind. But it is not to be despised. It is where we live, work, raise families, go to jobs, pay the mortgage and the IRS. It is where we practice and where we experience the fruits of practice. A fundamental teaching of the Buddha is emptiness. From the very beginning, there has never been a single thing. Nothing stirs, not even the awareness that nothing stirs. All is silent, vast, infinite and eternal, unchanging. It was never born and will never die. It has no beginning and no end. And there's nothing to be said about it or thought about it. My sitting here and blathering on is nothing but fox slobber, as Hakuin might inelegantly put it. These are two sides of the great reality. But how many of us truly realize this and live fully in that realization? Live as that realization? Can we ever make a distinction? Or should we? There is the matter of discernment. We must see clearly that practice is something that happens in time and space, the world of karma. At the same time, we must see just as clearly that we are vast, infinite, and eternal, transcending all time and all space. if we do not recognize and honor our lives in time and space, and dedicate a part of our lives to practice time on the mat, time at the center, time in Sesshin, we will not realize the timelessness and never the great reality that is beyond all notions of form and emptiness and yet is closer to us than our own eyeballs. It is our lifetime practice to reconcile these apparently irreconcilable facts. Are we this or are we that? If you say this, 30 blows. If you say that, 30 blows. If you say both this and that, or neither this nor that, 60 blows. This is a pretty subtle matter. It's addressed specifically in case number 13 in the Beyond Lu. It's the Blue Cliff Record, which we often call by its Japanese title, Hekigan Roku. The case reads, a monk asked Ba Ling, what is the school of Kanadeva? Ba Ling said, piling up snow in a silver bowl. That's the koan. And then, as usual, Shui Do added a verse. Old Ba Ling is truly something else. He knows how to say piling up snow in a silver bowl. The 96 each must know for themselves. If you don't know, then ask the moon in the sky. The school of Kanadeva, Kanadeva's school, beneath the red flag, arouse the pure wind. Ba Ling's full title is Great Master Hao Qian of Xin Kai in Ba Ling, Yezhou Province. It's modern Honan. But he is more familiar and more easily remembered by his Japanese name, Haryo. His exact dates are unknown, but he was a Dharma heir of Yunmen, who lived from 864 to 949 of the Common Era. And he was a Dharma brother of Dongshan Soju, who also lived about that period. So we can guess that Ba Ling was in that generation. Puts him sometime in the mid-10th century, the Five Dynasty era that arose after the collapse of the Tang. A monk asked Ba Ling, what is the school of Kanadeva? Ba Ling said, piling up snow in a silver bowl. This case is one of the three turning words of Master Ba Ling. Two of these turning words appear as koans in the Blue Cliff Record, numbers 13 and 100. Those two plus a third, which appears as case number 269 in the collection Entangling Vines, make up his three turning words that he offered to his teacher, Yunmen. As the commentator Yin Wu describes it, Ba Ling very much mirrors the style of Yunmen in that he asks a question and answers it himself. Here are the phrases from Yin Wu's commentary. What is the path? A clear-eyed man falls into a well. What is the sword so sharp it cuts a hair blown against it? Each branch of coral upholds the moon. What is the school of Kanadeva? Piling up snow in a silver bowl. Each question is put differently, and yet each is the same. What is the way? What is the hair-blown sword? What is this school of Kanadeva? What is Buddha? What is the great way, the great reality? In the koan collections, the phrases have been modified to begin, a monk asked, and then Ba Ling answers. I suspect the compilers wanted to introduce a little drama. But Yun Men said, "Later on the anniversary of my death, just recite these three turning words and you will have repaid my kindness in full." Wow. From Yun Men, that's high praise indeed. What is the school of Kanadeva? Kanadeva was the 15th Indian ancestor and the Dharma successor of Nagarjuna, one of the early exponents of Mahayana Buddhism. Transmission number 15 in the Denko Roku, the record of the transmission of the light, reads, "The 15th ancestor, Kanadeva, had an audience with the great being Nagarjuna. Knowing he was a man of great wisdom, Nagarjuna sent an attendant to place a bowl full of water in front of the master. Seeing this bowl full of water, the master at once took a needle, put it into the bowl, and offered it back to Nagarjuna. They laughed together, joyously manifesting one mind." Nagarjuna, Kanadeva, and Baling have a kind of simpatico. They're all three great talkers and debaters. In fact, Baling's nickname was Mouthy. In ancient India, it was customary for the winner of a debate to hold up a red flag. The loser stood under it, put his clothes on inside out, shaved his head, and became a monk. It is said that Kanadeva always held up the red flag. The master took a needle and put it into the bowl and offered it back to Nagarjuna. A needle in a bowl of water. Here is what that remarkable commentator Lex Hickson has to say. "Bowl is the comprehension of emptiness. There are no separate beings. Needle is bodhicitta, the mind of enlightenment. The adamantine aspiration that all sentient beings be awakened into conscious Buddhahood. Without the needle, which is an instrument to be used, without what Mahayana calls method, the water bowl of wisdom could never become the great way." On our altar, we have offerings, fruit and rice, perishables. They have to be replaced every now and then or they get rotten. Then there's a bowl of water. Bowl completely filled with water. Water. No form, no fixed form. Able to take any shape, whatever. Baling presents the school of Kanadeva is piling up snow in a silver bowl. The bowl is empty. It is emptiness itself. It has no size, diameter, depth, or volume. Piling up snow is activity in time and space. Handful after handful, we shovel it in. Will we ever fill it? Without the bowl, there is nothing to realize, no transcendence. We just slog along in our lives, the wheel of birth and death, bearing our troubles as best we can and wait for the inevitable end. But without the activity of practice in time and space, without the method, without the snow and the piling up, we may sometime experience something akin to what is called the void, but that experience quickly fades. Or maybe we hang on to it, and we end up floating about in a concept of emptiness, not knowing in the very worst sense. And when that inevitable end arrives, we are completely unprepared. If we do not practice, if we do not make the effort on the mat and in our lives, the great way never comes fully into consciousness. Master Hakuin, in a commentary on Dongshan's Five Ranks, writes, "Even though the student may have clearly grasped the genuine wisdom of absolute identity, he is still unable to fully manifest the marvelous wisdom in which all things are perfectly free and unrestricted. So long as he remains seated quietly, passively ensconced within this state of emptiness, all things within and without are utterly transparent, and his understanding is perfectly and unmistakably clear. But with the wisdom he has attained, the moment his mind comes into the slightest contact with the world of differentiation, with its defiled circumstances of turmoil and confusion, agitation and vexation, love and hate, he finds himself utterly helpless, and all the miseries of existence press in upon him." That could be a description of what happens to many of us after a strong session. We see with great clarity that place of vast silence, where all is one and none is separate from our Buddha nature. And we're naturally very reluctant to leave that space. But the moment we step outside the temple, we are assailed by all the confusions, all the blood, sweat, and tears of the karmic world. There's an old joke about a kid in art class who turned in a blank piece of paper for an assignment. The teacher was about to fail him, and the kid objected that it was indeed a drawing. "Of what?" asked the teacher. The kid said, "It's a polar bear eating marshmallows in a snowstorm." I think the teacher still flunked him. The kid was right in the absolute sense of no differentiation, but he missed the other side. Personally, I would feel a lot safer in the presence of a marshmallow than a polar bear. Practice is not always sitting quietly in the passive state of relative silence. It can be tremendously active, but it is not the activity of the self-centered ego. It is rather the inexpressible, mysterious activity of the universe, all that breathes and does not breathe. Baoling's metaphor of piling up snow in a silver bowl comes from a verse by Dongshan Yangjie, the song of the jewel mirror Samadhi. The first few lines go like this. "The teaching of thusness has been intimately communicated by Buddhas and ancestors. Now you have it, so keep it well. Filling a silver bowl with snow, hiding a heron in the moonlight. Taken as similar, they're not the same. When you mix them, you know where they are." Even when you mix them, you know where they are. Discernment is important, but we must not attach to either side. There is always some ambiguity, Robert Aiken's favorite word. Is that a crane in the mist? Is that a black cat in the alley? White snow, white bowl, where does one end and the other begin? Can anyone tell me where the form of this stick ends and its emptiness begins? Sometimes they are separate and distinct. Sometimes there's a blurring of the edges. Sometimes they are indistinguishable. In the early stages of practice, they are separate and distinct. This is natural. As we continue our practice, they merge into one reality. But as we become truly intimate with the great matter, they are not separate. They are not not separate. Form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. Does form emerge from emptiness, or does emptiness emerge from form? Does snow create the bowl, or does the bowl create the snow? When the densho, the big temple bell, rings, Is it the bell that rings, or is it the striker? Who can say? But it is only together that you get bong beyond any notion of bell or striker. In the same way, the great reality is beyond any notion of form or emptiness. Eventually, the question becomes a non-issue, a matter of no concern. But it is simply a realization that comes from deep within your own practice. Piling endless snow into a bottomless container seems a useless task, but the futility lies in the notion that we can fill it by trying. We try to fill it with ideas, knowledge, even our practice, even our enlightenment. If you have some notion that your practice is a task that one day you will complete, forget it. We will never fill the bowl. And yet, one single breath fills it completely. One single move fills it completely. One single moment of sitting fills it completely. All breaths are this breath. All moments are this moment. You are this very moment and in time and space. And you are beyond all time and all space. Shui Do's verse. I'll read it line by line and comment. Old Ba Ling, comment, not just old, but ageless, is truly something else. Comment, he is indeed remarkable. He knows how to say piling up snow in a silver bowl. Comment, if you can truly say it, your study is finished. The 96 each must know for themselves. Comment, in ancient India, 96 schools of philosophy. All are wrong, just admit it. If you don't know, then ask the moon and the sky. Comment, or maybe wait for Maitreya to arrive. The school of Kanadeva, Kanadeva's school. Comment, is it ever not in session? Beneath the red flag, arouse the pure wind. Comment, victory, nothing gained. Defeat, nothing lost. Just this. It is said that no two snowflakes are ever the same. No two breaths are ever the same. No two moments are ever the same. Each breath, each moment, each move is utterly and completely unique. Utterly and completely this moment, never seen before, never to be seen again. Practice like that. And together with all beings, we realize the way.